It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Very welcome to Tuesday afternoon's late lunch on LMFM radio. Just reminding you again that each day this week on the show, I have €100 in cash to give away to one of you. You see, Windsor Cluny, they're the main Nissan and Peugeot dealers, having a huge certified used car sales event right now. Great savings, 3-year warranty on over 100 certified used cars. Give them a check out and I guarantee you they'll look after you there. They've given us €100 each day to give away on the show via a digital MasterCard. Yes, it's yours today on Late Lunch. €100 to do it. Whatever you wish with. All you have to do is honk for 100. Yes, honk your horn for €100. Go to your car now, or if you're in your car now, don't do this while you're driving. Please, please don't do this. But anyway, honk your horn, record it, and WhatsApp it in to me on 086 1800 658. Honk for 100, honk your horn today for €100 in cash. 086 1800 658. WhatsApp it in to me now. We'll have a listen to your honking during the afternoon and we'll give away €100 a little later on the show. Now, my first guest today has been with me over the years on Late Lunch and I'm delighted she's back with me today to talk about a petition that went before the Joint Committee on Public Petitions and the Ombudsman recently, and it says to make unlawfully killing a pet an offence akin to murder. That is a very, very strong statement. Sandra Higgins from Go Vegan World is with me again. Good afternoon, Sandra.
Good afternoon, Jerry. Thank you for having me.
Not at all. You're very welcome to the show. Now, when I read just the sentence there, make unlawfully killing a pet an offence. Now, I take it that that means a pet dog, a pet cat, a pet whatever, a pet animal that people keep and love and adore. It only applies to that, I take it.
It does. Yes, this petition only applies to that. But Go Vegan World and animal activists everywhere would say that this should apply to all animals.
Why, Sandra?
Sorry, what did you say there, Jerry?
Why do you believe it should apply to all animals? Yes.
Well, for if I can look at this petition first, because I think a lot of people are really interested because so many people have pets. And, you know, can I say that we don't advocate using other animals for companionship either, but an awful lot of animals are unwanted and rescued. And they live as family members and people care about them. And when something happens to them, it's devastating, particularly if it's deliberate. So I think that they, I don't know a lot about this petition, but I've seen similar petitions in the UK. And they arise when a family is left devastated, when somebody deliberately harms or kills their, so in inverted commas, pet. And at the moment, other animals only have legal protection insofar as the interests of their owners matter. So they're regarded as the property of humans. So in essence, they have no more rights than a handbag or a table or a car. So they only matter insofar as their, in inverted commas, owner suffers if something happens to them. So we agree with this petition. It should be wrong to kill another animal, they should move from the status of being the property of humans to being recognised as non-human persons. Because they're able to feel as we do, they suffer when we hurt them, they suffer pain, they can feel all the negative and positive emotions that we feel, like loneliness, frustration, fear, or happiness and fun. And their lives are of value to them. So when we hurt them or we harm them or we kill them, we take what they lose is their future life. We take their life from them, a life that they valued as much as we value ours. So we agree with this petition, but we would extend it to all non-human animals because there's no ingredient in the life or the body of another animal that we need for any of our needs. We only use them for fairly frivolous things like desire, the taste of their flesh, or because we've always done it, which isn't an excuse for anything. Mm.
I hear what you're saying as regards, pets and people. You acknowledge that they love their four-legged friends, their dogs, their cats, or whatever they value in terms of what they call a pet. But even to classify the killing of, and I have to say, I abhor, condemn, would never condone, you should never harm a poor animal, you know what I mean, and under any circumstances. But to classify it as murder, Sandra?
Well, this applies to the law, you see. So it's a change in status from being the property of humans, where they have no more rights than a handbag, to being regarded as persons. That's where the murder comes in. So I know the terminology might seem unusual to people who are not used to considering other animals as being beings with feelings and minds in the way that vegans and animal rights activists do, but that is actually how it would apply in the law. And what we would say is that laws only reflect social values, and the world at the moment is not vegan, and we don't have those social values that killing another animal is murder. But when you say, Jerry, and I know that 99.99% of your listeners feel the same issue, I would never harm a poor animal or a poor defenseless animal. What we're thinking is I'd never harm them, unnecessarily.
Yeah.
But every day, we live our lives. We get up in the morning, we get into the shower, we use products that have been tested on other animals. We go down and we have our breakfast and we eat a boiled egg or we pour milk on our porridge. Everyone, and then say we get dressed in a woolen jumper. Every one of those actions harms a poor animal, kills a poor animal. And most of us are not aware of that because the industries that profit from their use keep the facts of animal use very well hidden from us. But if anybody was to go into most of the farms where they live and any of the slaughterhouses where they're killed, or study the effects on, say, the hens who lay the eggs, the amount of very serious, devastating illnesses that egg laying causes to hens, how their brothers are killed at one day of age by live mincing or gassing, or go into a slaughterhouse and see how they're killed, or go onto a dairy farm and hear a mother cow crying because she's been separated from her baby calf so that we can have that milk. The vast majority of people would turn away from animal use.
And, there's not a lot I can argue with you there, to be honest, in what you're saying. But you do know, in the world we live in, we are in this situation now. And in an Irish context, I've said this to you before, our reliance on the dairy industry, on the beef industry, the employment that gives, the revenue it brings, etc., etc. It's not possible to step away from that, in one fell swoop, Sandra.
Well, Jerry, the tobacco farmer said the same thing. And actually, it is possible to step away from it because people have the idea that vegans and animal rights activists are anti-farming. We're not anti-farming at all. In fact, veganism protects human rights just as much as animal rights. every vegan has to live the same as every non-vegan. So I get up every morning, I get into the shower, I use products that weren't tested on other animals, I go down and have my breakfast, and I eat the products that farmers produce. So we farmers will be needed and protected and respected every bit as much and more so if they're producing the foods that and the goods that vegans use rather than non-vegans. In the morning, if everybody went vegan, the farmers would just follow and produce what we need to use and what we need to eat. And in fact, Gerry, if you look at the weather at the moment, you know, the farmers haven't been able to let the animals out because the ground is sodden. Mm. And they're running out of food. We see it here on the sanctuary. You know, we're dangerously low on straw. The fields are very wet. We're continually treating the animals' feet. You can see that as a result of climate change, the biggest contributors of which is the animal agricultural industry. And remember, in Ireland, our emissions from agriculture are over 38%, and most of that is coming from animal agriculture. So the very industry that is causing climate change and environmental destruction, the rebound effects are that farming is not sustainable because of the destruction to the environment and because of the weather. The farmers are already feeling the effects of that. We've had several summers of drought where farmers didn't have enough water to give the animals, and they had to slaughter them earlier than they would have normally. And there was a risk that they wouldn't have a harvest. They wouldn't have any grain for the following years. So we need to change to a plant-based system because of what we're doing to the environment. And in turn, that plant-based system will be a sustainable way of living for farmers. So it will protect farmers. And honestly, if the organisations that represented farmers have their interests at heart, this is what they would be promoting, instead of the nonsense that one tiny country like Ireland can feed the world when we actually can't even, we're not even self-sustaining as it is. Mm. They would be promoting and they would be encouraging farmers, they would be teaching them the skills they need to engage in non-animal agriculture. They would be changing the subsidies from animal agriculture to plant agriculture and giving them every facility they need, including actually paying farmers to just stop and rewild the land. Just pay them to stop farming.
So what would happen in a sense with all the cattle we have, all the sheep, you know what I mean, that are populating the country at the moment, the hens that we have everywhere? What in a practical sense would happen? Where would they, would they be part of life in Ireland anymore? Where would that go? I'm just curious about that.
First of all, the world is unlikely to go vegan overnight.
Yes.
We're unlikely to go vegan overnight in Ireland. So there'd be a gradual decrease in the demand for animal products, and so a gradual decrease in the numbers of animals farmed, right down until there are none. So it wouldn't be the case that we're left with a lot of animals and we don't know what to do with them. But you're right that they wouldn't exist. The only ones that would exist are ones that can successfully be rewilded. And this is an area that I'm not an expert on. I know the animals on our sanctuary are far from rewilded. They take an awful lot of care. The thing is, the animals that we use now were wild at one stage. So they live quite independent of us. And when we started farming 10 or 12,000 years ago, we corralled them and made them dependent on us and selectively bred them to produce more eggs and milk and flesh than they would have in their natural state. But they were wild at one stage. So, you know, it could be that some of them could be rewilded. But at the moment, the understanding is that they wouldn't exist because we don't need them.
Mm. And you know, people will say, I'm getting plenty of comment in, I'll read some of them in a moment. People would say, look, at the human, mankind is a carnivore. You know, we've always eaten meat.
We're not carnivores. Carnivores are animals that are able to hunt and eat their animals raw. So they have great speed. They have usually claws for catching them, and they're able to bite through the fur and the skin and eat the animal raw. Humans are, the classification of humans is omnivores, which means that we can eat plant or animal products. So we have a choice, and the only moral choice is not to eat other animals. As you said, Gerry, never harm a poor animal. Every animal that we eat and every animal product that we use causes the most grievous harm. So much so that when people post videos of standard legal practice on social media, those videos are usually taken down and they're termed to be too violent. That's how bad it is. An awful lot of people in the animal rights movement are very severely traumatized from witnessing what happens to other animals. So if it's so bad that we can't look at it, we certainly shouldn't be eating them. But I'm veering off your point, Gerry.
No. You've addressed it for sure for me, and I hear what you're saying as well, Sandra. Look, I have to leave it there for today. Always happy to air your views on the show, and you are deeply committed, I know, to what you do. And lucky those animals that have you as their carer and others too. Thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Thank you, Gerry.
Take care of yourself. Bye. That's Sandra Higgins there from Go Vegan World. I'll come back to your comments straight after this break. Yes, what planet is that one on, says a listener to me today. Same as ourselves, I have to say. Another one says plants have feelings too. Yes, I'm sure they have. Maddie says that lady is living in a different dimension than the rest of us. I agree that pets should be kept safe and healthy and should never be abused. However, just because she wants to lead a vegan lifestyle, that's her choice. It is indeed. And she's a very gentle, kind woman. And I respect her highly. And she has her point of view. And I respect that too. And it may differ from many, many of us. But we've always got to listen to the other side and then make up your mind. Louise, they're honking for the 100. They certainly are, aren't they, today?
Definitely.
On Late Lunch.
They don't give two beeps.
Have you a couple there we can have a listen to? Yeah. Who have you first?
Okay, this is Marina Smith in Kings Court.
We'll okay. Try. Yeah. Here we go.
Well, Go Vegan World and animal activists everywhere.
I don't hear a horn there. Must have.
We didn't get the honk there.
No.
Have you got one or a honk or a beep beep for me? Come on. Give me another one. Who have you? What's the name on
go
it?
Go Bridget Byrne. Hang on.
Okay, Bridget, here we go. Oh, yes. Oh, be japers.
She's a lot of
hunts. I love it, Bridget. Give us another one more there.
Stephanie
There's
Burke.
Loads of them. Give us another one. Who's this?
That's so cute.
Oh, that's cute.
That's like a junior.
Who was that? Stephanie?
Stephanie Burke, yeah.
Oh, lovely, Stephanie. Keep them coming to us. We have €100 in cash. Honk your horn for us today. WhatsApp it in to us, 086 1800 658 with your name and details, and you could have €100 cash in your pocket come end of business today. After two on the show, Father Paddy Rush, about the amalgamation of dioceses and parishes, but taking us up to top of the hour at two, it's ABBA. And take a chance. Come on, take a chance. Honk your horn. Come on, let's be having you.
If you change your mind, take a chance. I'm the first in line. Take a chance. Honey, I'm still free. Take a chance. Take a chance on.
You're with Late Lunch on LMFM Radio this Tuesday afternoon. If you follow the news, which most of us do in whatever format, you will have heard and seen last week that Rome has reorganised the Irish setup of the church, especially in the west of Ireland, where two large dioceses have had to incorporate other dioceses, so a bishop has more responsibility in his area. But I suppose it's important of things to come, and with this in mind, I'm delighted to welcome back a very good friend of ours to the show. You know him well. I think he'll be on this side of the microphone, to be honest with you, soon. Father Paddy Rush, thank you for joining
thank
me.
Thank you, Gerry, and good afternoon to all your listeners. Hello, Louise. And Gerry, I was just listening to the weather there. Could you not read out that it's going to be sunny 24/7? Is that not allowed? No?
Paddy, you're looking at the man who'd love to do that. I mean, absolutely love to do it.
It would be very unfair to anybody going about, but that would be a perfect thing to do.
Louise, what did you say to me there? Say anything. Louise said, I'll only have to go to confession if I lie. Very good. Very smart.
She keeps us all on our toes.
Absolutely. Everybody on our toes. But look, I remember when we had a good long sunny spell. I think it was last year, the year before. I can't remember. Nearly every day when I got the weather, I just said, sure, I'll just go in and say it's sun wall to wall. But Paddy, it's been rain wall to wall nearly.
Oh, I know. It's shocking. Yeah. We pray for weather.
Yes,
pray
please for good weather. Do for us. But I was watching the weather before you came in. And gradually during the week, it is getting better. And we're going to have a nice weekend. Yeah. Thank God. God for that. Anyway, just to mention, you are parish priest of Monaster Boys and you've had to take on a new role. Just explain to our listeners what has happened.
Okay, so last September the Archbishop asked me would I take on administration of Tohar Parish. Father Carroll retired and Father Daly, who was the parish priest a few years before that, is still working in the parish but as a retired priest working full time still. So it's the responsibility of the administration and all of that that really is connected with that. So, yeah, it's a smaller reflection of what's happening in the west of Ireland. And the Pope asked the nuncio, his representative here in Ireland, to make this announcement just last week. So basically two smaller dioceses are being left without a bishop.
Yes.
And they're going to be left that way.
Okay.
And then the neighbouring bishop is taking responsibility.
Father.
And it's the same in our... So Tohar's not going to have a parish priest in the future, but a parish priest from the area will be taking responsibility for Tohar. But in effect, it's the role of a parish priest, in effect,
yes.
Really, you know.
So now you have a much larger area. But I suppose on the other hand, as you were saying to me, there's a smaller congregation overall than there would have been many moons ago.
Yes, I think there is a balancing happening in a sense that, you know, say 20 years ago or 30 years ago, there would have been large numbers of people
yes.
coming to church regularly. And maybe there were more priests who were able to deal with that. Now that with less priests, but there's also maybe less people attending regularly. So your responsibilities on the front line as such are less.
Yes.
But the administration is still the same. You still have to look after the churches. You have to still, you know, kind of work with pastoral councils and finance councils and schools and so on and so forth. So there's still a certain amount of work that remains the same. But there's a little balance.
A little. How many priests, along with yourself, how many priests cover now Tohar and Monaster Boys? How many working priests?
Tohar and Monaster Boys, two.
Three,
I beg your pardon. Tom, myself,
yes.
and Akan,
okay.
who was in. And Akan sends his apologies. He's doing other things.
That's okay. And did you say Tom is retired at the moment? Yes, he is.
He's a retired working priest.
Okay, yes. So he's needed to be part of the administration of the parish there. Look, you know, no matter what we say, and this is a fact, in my opinion, when I observe births, deaths, marriages,
yes.
and other ceremonies.
I don't want to be cheeky, but yeah. Sometimes in work it's called hatch, match, dispatch.
Okay.
So births, deaths and marriages. Every organisation has its colloquial terms.
We love that. I have to say that is fantastic. Yes, but it's a play on words
with
the situation that we, you know, in life, this is life. You
it's
know
life.
What I mean?
It's life. Yeah,
but at the end of the day, you know, whether you have no faith, whether you have other faith or whatever, I want to say this again, that when I watch news especially and there is a tragedy, mostly you will hear about that, it is yourself or the local church person that is speaking to the media at that stage.
Well, hopefully, you know, we have some kind of connection with the local community. And I think really, I suppose, as a priest, that's really where your key work happens. Some local community connection, knowing people, knowing, being part of their lives, whether it be through the school or through the church or through the nursing home or through the community centre, whatever it is. And we have get to know a knowledge of people, you know. Now, we could always be better. I know I could always be better. And sometimes I remember somebody's name when they're 5 feet away from me, behind me on the street, you know.
I'm in that club too,
yes.
Can I tell you, Paddy? Don't worry about that at all.
But I think it's important to know people.
Mm.
And I think that's really where the work is important. That's the important work to do. And if we can... I do, you know, as I reflect, it's one of the things that has been a real joy to me, that I've got to know people, families, groups of people, areas, you know, and you can't do everything, but you try and do as much as you can do. And it's lovely. It's one of the blessings of being a priest, that you really have a very open reception.
Yeah.
You know, people generally
are very
open to you.
And that is still alive and well and there, despite all, you know,
huge, yeah.
that has happened. Yes.
Absolutely. That has not changed. That has not changed. Very, very rarely would you get an unwelcome message.
Yes.
You know, But I think you have to be respectful of other people's realities and traditions and perspectives.
How do you feel when someone comes to you, perhaps that you don't know or may not be practicing, or, you know what I mean, not on your radar at all, you're on theirs or they're on yours, and yet they come to you and say, Father Rush, help.
If you can help, always say yes. Always try to say yes. That's the mantra. Always try and say yes. We should never, our first response should never be no. Let's try and say yes. Let's try and see what we can do to meet where you're at. But I think also, again, the respect works both ways. I mean, we're coming from a tradition. We have our discipline in the church and so on that we try and, it's important to follow as best we can. We're all sinners. We're all in need of God's mercy and forgiveness. But we have life to live. And, you know, I think if we can do everything. And Pope Francis's recent message about blessing couples and so on and so forth. I mean, all of that's an attempt to reach out. I think the Pope's representative talked about adding impetus and vitality to the communities in the West by this reorganization. And I think there's something about that, you know, we have a connection with a group of people. So to reorder that can often, you know, give a bit of energy to things again. Maybe I know that a lot of people who come to church bemoan sometimes the fact that there are lots of empty pews on a Saturday night or a Sunday morning. But if all those smaller communities came together, we could actually have very full communities and vibrant churches. All the choirs are good, but, you know, lively choirs, good age range, you know, young people involved, talents and skills that each individual parish now may be limited can be pulled together. We can combine resources, we can pool our endeavours and look forward with confidence and hope, I think.
And that you will have to do down the road, like we see already where the number you mentioned about the pews not being full or whatever, we've seen a rationalisation of masses as well, and that has happened everywhere as well. Do you see that continuing? Do you see?
Oh, yes.
And do you have hope, Father Akin, of course, who came with you here and is in the parish and a younger man? The age profile of priests is rising all of the time. But yes. I will say this to you. I was in Rome last week and we noticed a lot of young priests and sisters as well, yeah. You know, milling about around the Vatican and St. Peter's as well. So there are younger people coming to the church.
Oh, still. Absolutely, Jerry. I mean, we have to remember in Ireland, we're a little window into the life of the church, the global church. The global church is on the rise. There are increasing numbers of faithful. There are increasing numbers of clergy, religious, all over the world. So Ireland is as it was 100 years ago, unusual. It is also now unusual in the dynamic of the life of the church here. But there are still very vibrant communities here. And when you see my own community, I mean, I love attending Mass. And even if sometimes, like we had a daily Mass, one of the things I like to do is I like to have a daily Mass in every church if we can, you know. So one day during the week, there's Mass in the church, that there's no church left without Mass. So you might only have maybe a small congregation of four or five. And the other night we had only four or five and we gathered around the altar. We came and we sat, not in the pews, we sat around the altar and we had a more informal approach, but it was still in the church, you know?
Yes.
And I think those adaptions are coming. I think those are where you're going to have smaller, you might have house masses, community masses. Used to be a big thing a long time ago. But I think they'll come back for more practical reasons, because there might just, in that particular area, there might just be a few people attending and they gather at homes rather than necessarily in churches.
So the change will continue and we have to be prepared that there is a lot of change still to come.
Yeah.
Do you ever see, you know, a revitalization in the numbers of, you know...
I don't think things will continue, will go back to what we had. No, yeah. I don't. Maybe I could be wrong, of course, but no, I don't think so. I think, though, what we have, we will find new opportunities in what we have to engage with one another. I love the idea of a congregation ministering to each other. Yet, you know, someone in the congregation who has a particular skill, like a skill set. I'm awful aware whenever I celebrate Mass, you know, that there are CEOs there. There are, you know, very qualified lecturers and, you know, people who are financially astute and so on. I'm speaking to people who have far superior gifts and talents than I have, you know, but together we can maybe find something of God's plan for us all. Yeah. That there's, and this is synodality, which Pope Francis is very big on at the moment, you know, but synodality has been part of the church from the very, very beginning. We lost a little bit of it when we had a hierarchical feed and more emphasis on that, but it's that togetherness, just being together, and we can, the solutions, we used to say it when we did school retreats, the solutions to our problems are in this room. If we have a problem, the solution is here, and let's find it together. And I fully believe in that. I really do. I think people respond.
You're very positive always and hopeful. I say that about you.
Thank you.
You carry that with you all the time, and it's it really is. It you know, it comes across all the time. So you are positive.
Well, yes, but can I be pragmatic too?
Yes.
I mean, there are how many churches around? There's lots of churches that will not survive.
Yes.
Because the money will not be there to repair them, to heat them, to insure them, et cetera, et cetera. Parishes are going to have to make choices about where they go and what they do. It's just pragmatic and practical, unfortunately. But with respect to the tradition, and again, we can find ways to honour the tradition. Like, for example, we're coming up to Cemetery Sundays all over the country now, and there will be people coming who rarely come to church, but they'll come to the cemetery blessings.
Yes.
Because that's important, their connection with their family, with their history. And I think maybe, again, that's a lovely moment of encounter. It's like seeing people maybe at Christmas or a wedding that we don't normally see, and we make that connection, and we give a good account of faith and of the church and of the community, and I think people respond to that. Doing things together, it's been part of our journey. I looked up today in preparation for coming in, Cardinal Brady back in 2008 and 2009 sent out a video inviting the people of our diocese to think about coming together in pastoral areas. That's that 15 years ago. That was, and it's only really starting to work out now in Monasterboice, Toher, etc., etc.
But it does bear out the point that in life, at those key moments we mentioned earlier on, and again, you mentioned the patterns, the blessings of the graves as well. There are times, key moments in people's life, and they are still very important to the Irish people.
Oh, so important.
And that's why, you know what I mean, what you say there for the future is so significant, and the way it is going to develop. Look, I'm going to leave it there today. I just want to mention one thing before I do. When I was in Rome, I had the pleasure of attending a concelebrated mass in the Pantheon, and
oh,
it
lovely.
Was
yes,
very, very yes, special. Yes. I mean, really, only a small group there, but it was
fantastic.
Yeah, it really,
Rome,
really was.
And was the weather good in Rome?
Oh, 25 degrees, Paddy. I'd be doing reading the weather out there.
Did you not bring any home
on Rome local radio? And it would be sun every day. I tried to, but I think it's a little delayed. It's coming this weekend.
Just to say thanks again, Jerry, for bringing me on. Could I say to everybody, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of the future. The future, The Lord will be there, that God's grace will provide, and but I think we all have to do our bit, whatever our bit is, and take part, but don't be afraid and never give up.
Father Paddy Rush, thank you so much for joining me on the show again today.
Thank you.
It's time for our Two on Tuesday.
Two on Tuesday.
Playing the songs that just never quite made it to number one.
But we were so close.
I'm supposed to be number one.
We were so close.
Two on Tuesday.
Yes, if you're unfamiliar with what we do at this time, every Tuesday on Late Lunch, we pick a song from the UK charts that made it to number two but just fell short of making it to top spot. And today I go back to the 21st of July 2007. She was there for 1 week only. Yes, just 1 week at number two. Let's have a listen to our Two on Tuesday this Tuesday. Yes, it comes to us this afternoon from Fergie and Big Girls Don't Cry.
Straight in it.
Two on Tuesday. Big Girls Don't Cry from Fergie on your late lunch. 1 week only, 21st July 07. Now, July, middle of the summer. You'd hardly think this was the number one that prevented that song from making top spot, but you see, it was. And I'll tell you why. It was number one in the UK for 10 weeks. It was almost impossible to dislodge it. And to be honest with you, if she released it in Ireland at the moment, she wouldn't have to go to number one. It's the lady herself. It's Miss Rihanna and Umbrella. Umbrella, the big number one that prevented our two on Tuesday making it to top spot. And do you remember, Louise, that poor young one was run out of a field up north by either a member of the Orange Order or a unionist politician. Do you remember that? Do you remember that incident with Rihanna?
No.
She went up to shoot a video in a field in the north. Oh, yeah. And she wasn't just fully clad. And an Orange Order member or one of the unionist member or something scattered her out of the field. Get out of there, you brazen hussy. Get out of my field. You can't be filming in there. And you're not wearing much on. Do you remember that?
No.
With Rihanna?
I thought when you mentioned there, because you always see them with black umbrellas, don't you?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, she didn't need an umbrella. And the bowler hat.
Yeah.
She didn't need an umbrella that day in the field, I tell you. She didn't need an umbrella at all. I love the video with that song. Anyway, are you voting with me or against me? Let me put my cards on the table. For me, Umbrella all the way.
Yeah, I'll be with you.
Oh, absolutely. A big number one, 10
Number
weeks.
Two doesn't really feature
in
my head.
No, and I can't remember it either, to be honest with you. Yes, justice done there. Umbrella number one for Rihanna at the expense of our two on Tuesday, which came from Fergie and Big Girls Don't Cry. Late lunch, LMFM Radio. Helen Dillon's with us next. She knows all about the CAO. Joining me now on Late Lunch to talk about the CAO application process is Helen Dillon. She's a careers coach for teenagers and young adults. Afternoon, Helen.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm really good. Thanks for joining me on the show. I suppose people are wondering why we're talking about this at this time of the year. I was just looking back myself. The process opened last November, but there's a couple of significant dates happening at the minute. In March, the late application facility opened, and that's closing soon enough on the 1st of May. Would you just tell us where people are at with it? Do many people, wait for late applications, that type of thing?
Not really. I think the late applications will mostly be for the mature applicants.
Okay.
Because the schools will have geared up the teenagers to have had their applications in by the 1st of February.
Yeah.
And then after the 1st of February, it closes for a little while and reopens on the 5th of May for the Change of Mind facility. And that's really what we're aiming teenagers for now, is to get all of their choices sorted now, coming up in the next few weeks. And it will close, the hard deadline then is the 1st of July.
Yes.
But in the middle of that is the Leaving Cert. So we want the teenagers to make sure that their application form is filled out correctly, and that they have a good strategy in terms of their choices for the Leaving Cert or for their CAO applications, to make sure that they give themselves the best opportunity of good courses in September time.
Okay, so this is all geared towards the Leaving Cert ahead. These dates refer to this coming year's Leaving Cert.
Yeah, absolutely. The dates actually remain quite stable from year to year.
Yeah.
But it's this year's Leaving Cert that we're interested in, and to make sure that all the teenagers doing the Leaving Cert this year, you know, they're head down now with the exams.
Yeah.
And some of them don't even know what they want to do.
Mm.
And they still haven't made up their mind, and getting a bit panicky and a bit stressed. So I'm encouraging teenagers now to have really good think about in the next few weeks before the exams are really, you know, looming, to sit down, do proper research for all of their courses, you know, and really work out what it is that they want to do in the future, and then work out what course will get them there.
Okay, that's really important advice, to know what you want to do and then look at what will facilitate that. I take it then that with all the dates that have gone so far, and the 1st of July being the change of mind closing, as you mentioned there,
yeah,
that most people listening to us today are their children who are in exam years, have their, you know, their choices in already. What about this change of mind? You mentioned there a moment ago, are there many will actually revisit this, you know, at this stage?
Absolutely. You know, it will be the minority who, coming up to, say, the 1st of February, will know what they want to do. And, you know, they may have been thinking about it for the past number of years. The lot of teenagers don't, and they might have just put in something. And then as they're going through the exam year, they're kind of going, well, actually, well, my results might be a bit better, so I might go for a similar course with higher points. Or they might think, oh, well, actually, I might want to go for a course that I thought I would never be able to achieve, but actually I'm doing better. Or they might start panicking and say, I'm never going to get those results, I'm going to downgrade what I'm going to apply for. So there's all sorts of things going through their minds to try and, you know, to just try and get the thing that they think will suit them, but, you know, maybe not. I'd caution that kind of panic change, you know, really just think it through, talk with your parents or teachers or whatever, and you know, to have a really good, steady decision and not a panicked, rushed decision.
You mentioned parents there as well. Should a parent sit with a young person when they're, you know, finalising this during this time, if they haven't made their mind up? Is that a good idea? Because they generally have their own password access to it, you know, and they're reluctant perhaps to give that away. But is it a good idea for a parent or guardian, whoever's looking after a young person, to be with them, sitting down and going through it with them?
Absolutely. Not to take their password and not to take charge or anything like that, but just to be that second pair of eyes looking over their shoulder to make sure they have the details right, you know, that they have put in a few different choices. Don't have just one choice. Have a few, have a range of choices, have a range of courses that are a different point level, because if you want the gold standard course, that's 500 plus points, and it might be a push, but put in something similar for 400 points that you know you'll easily get. So you have something to, you know, you'll have something at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So definitely, parents, you know, reassure your teenager that you're not going to take charge. You don't need their password, but please let me just check as a second pair of eyes that the application is filled in properly. And, you know, there's been many kids have lost out because they didn't fill their application form in properly. It's not difficult, but it is a little bit tricky. And it's possibly the first time a teenager has had to fill in an application form online that has got such a consequence on their life.
Sure.
You know, so I would definitely recommend that second pair of eyes to make sure it's all correct.
The other thing is, I have my heart set, putting myself in a student's shoes, on something that I want and nothing else. To fill in one choice would be crazy alone. But, you know, then, you know, deciding what should be 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever. How many choices would you say on average a student should fill in? How many should you go down? How far should you go down with your choices?
Well, it's really, you have a maximum of 10.
Yes.
And I would only put down choices that you will actually want to do.
Okay.
Don't throw in something just because if you end up with that choice, there's no going back. There's no saying, oh, well, I'll take the other one, because you won't get that offer. So the first thing is only put down something that you're actually willing to do.
Mm.
And secondly, generally speaking, if you have your heart set on one particular career, there's more than just one way of getting that career. So have a look at similar courses. For example, if you want to be a physiotherapist, but the points are really, really high. Well, another course that you can do is something like sports science. Mm. But then you would have to do a master's to become a physiotherapist, you know. But that's a valid route. So I would really encourage teenagers to think, you know, not just the direct route, but the roundabout route as well. You know, just in case that physiotherapy is out of your reach, at least you're doing something that you'll enjoy. You know, if you, you know, sports science, it will be similar, it's not exactly the same, but you know you have a pathway.
Yes.
You know, and you will find that with most courses that even if you can't get it through an undergraduate degree, do a good quality undergraduate degree and then be prepared to do a master's afterwards. Mm. Particularly in the health professions, they're very difficult to get into. But most of them will have an access point by doing a science degree and then converting that by a master's. So there's plenty of avenues that you can take rather than the direct route if that's just a little bit out of reach.
Yeah, there are more ways than one. But I come back to that again. What would you say? One, I know what you're saying, and somebody wants physiotherapy, then you have the sports science. If there are other ones that are pathways, should you have on average four, five choices there? What would you say?
Yeah, I would have four or five
okay.
choices, good quality choices. But you have to make sure that you would be prepared to do any one of those five. You know, so they have to be quality, relevant to what you want to do, and but have a range of different point levels in that, so that if you don't get your number one choice at, for argument's sake, 550 points, well, then you have something similar at 500 points and maybe something at 450, all giving you options to get to where you want to go.
If you accept the first offer that's made to you and it's not your first choice, let's say it's your second or third choice, should you accept that offer straight away? And is there a chance then that you, on a revision, might get the second or first choice?
Yes, I would accept it, and hopefully that second choice is similar to your first, so you're still happy to do it. And yes, accept it, and then hopefully in your round two offers, which will be probably mid towards the end of September, you'll get an offer. But yes, accept the second that second choice, please.
You know, this thing starts back in November but runs right through. You know, it's virtually nearly a year process and all those different deadlines in it. You know that well, Helen.
Yeah.
But we're talking because this is very important at this time. And I know the focus is on preparing for exams, doing the best they can there. But this is central to your future. You just want to say that again today. You got to pay this attention.
Absolutely. You have to pay attention. And parents, don't just leave it to your teenagers or even the school. Make sure that you have a good conversation. You don't have to tell them what to do, your teenagers what to do, but please listen to what they're considering applying for. Think it out and make sure they have got a good quality application in.
Very important. Helen, where can people find out more about you and follow you, or, you know, see what you're on about? Because you're well regarded in the whole area of career coaching for teens and young adults.
Thank you very much. Yes, I have a website, yourpathcoaching.ie, or you, if you Google my name, Helen Dillon, you'll find me on LinkedIn and Facebook and Instagram.
Plenty of places. So yourpathcoaching.ie is the website, and then across social media, Helen Dillon.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining me today to remind people, because there's lots listening today who are involved themselves or have children or young adults involved in this whole process. It's very important to concentrate on it at this time. Lovely to chat to you, Helen.
Thanks very much, Jerry.
Not at all. Take care of yourself. Bye. That's Helen Dillon there, careers coach for teens and young adults. Yourpathcoaching.ie. Just to remind you again, you're with Late Lunch on LMFM Radio. Honk, honk, beep, beep. Back with you in a moment. Louise, isn't Trump just the gift that keeps on giving?
Yeah.
Did you see him in the court in New York yesterday? Here's the thing about it, though. Do you know this? They've rejected loads of jurors because they're trying to get 10.
All biased.
Yeah. But you know when the jury sit to deliberate in the final reckoning on this case, if one of them, it has to be all 10 to agree.
Oh.
He only needs one to demur and he walks out free. I didn't realise that.
So he'd probably walk out free.
Yeah, well, I think... But listen, I have to say this. It just came to me yesterday. He put up on his Truth Social, "I've just stormed out of Biden's court." But you know, he gets everything wrong. He should have said, "I've just stormied out of Biden's court." Shouldn't he? He should have said, "I've just stormied out of Biden's court." Come on, Donald. Get your grammar right there, son. I thought he missed a trick there, to be honest with you.
Or I've just stormied out of my former court.
Anyway, we watch with interest from a distance for sure. Cuckoo. Cuckoo. The first cuckoo's arrived, Louise. Yes,
I got
word from Sligo this morning.
Oh, they're down there.
From Jerry Martin that the cuckoo has landed and heard him for the first time this morning on the 16th of April. There you go. So the first cuckoo has arrived in Sligo. Thanks, Jerry, for letting me know. Really do appreciate it. If you hear the cuckoo in this neck of the woods, do let me know. I always like to hear from you. 086 1800 658 by WhatsApp or text to Late Lunch at any stage. I should have mentioned to Father Paddy about the Holy Communion donuts.
Yeah.
Krispy Kreme is it donuts are producing a donut for, is it communion or confirmation?
I suppose you could use it for both, but they're saying communion.
And why does it
make it on our LMFM page?
Yeah, why does it make it a communion?
Because at the very bottom of it, it's kind of like the donut is shaped, and at the very bottom of the round shape, they have a cross.
Yes.
So that's it. That's the whole.
That's
thing.
It.
Yeah.
Anyway, they do anything to sell a few donuts. That's all I can say.
I don't like the mother's chances if the child is wearing a white dress and getting all the sugar on them.
Oh, sticky wicket for
sure.
Want
to pack the tissues there.
Oh, listen, you have to get the water wipes for that for sure. Brian's been on to us to say, "I was listening to your woman from King's Court who honked her horn earlier on in the show. Would Mick Jagger call that lady a honky-tonk woman, Jerry?"
The honky-tonk woman is back.
Is she?
Yes.
Go on, give us it. Come on, let's hear.
She messaged us in again.
Go on, here we go.
There you go. Better this time.
Much better this time. That was the lady that we didn't hear the honking of the horn the last time. Thank you indeed for saying it. Come on, give us a feel for a few more
there. All right, Lisa.
Lisa, come on, honking for 100. Oh yeah, nice little perky beep, beep, beep there from Lisa this afternoon.
Caroline?
Go on.
That's nice.
Oh, that's a different type of one. Thank you, Caroline. Have you another one there? You were telling me you had one, a very unusual one.
Yes.
Have
you? Well, where was it now? I can't find him now.
Was that from John?
There you go. Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Have we got it?
It's funny.
Here he is. In the name of God, that's a fire alarm. That's a fire alarm. John, get off out of that. That's not a horn. Jeepers. Oh, my ears nearly blew off there on the headset. Are you telling me that? Oh, good. Well, I'll tell you, it's one loud one you have there, John. Any more for me, Louise? There's loads there. Go on. Who's this?
See, we'll play Kathleen's.
Go on.
Go on. I like that one. I like the start of it.
I love that one. Go on. Oh, I love it. I really like that one for sure. You see, we're giving away 100 euro cash and Late Lunch each day. All you have to do is honk for 100. Yes, honk your horn and WhatsApp it into us. 086 1800 658. Windsor, Cluny, Mail, Nissan and Peugeot dealers have their big certified used car sales on at the moment. 3-year warranty on over 100 cars. Check them out. They've given us 100 euro to give away. And we will before the end of the show. And guess what, Louise? Guess what? You just put in the right song there. Because whoever wins the 100 euro today is going to be singing the Pointer Sisters song. Yes, they will. Because they'll be so excited. News, weather and sport on the way. Top of the hour at 3:00. Now, Louise, they've been honking their horns across the northeast today. Don't feel offended if you hear honking in your vicinity. Some people are very interested, winning €100 cash thanks to Windsor, Clonie, Maine, Nissan and Peugeot dealers who have the big certified used car sales event on at the moment. Check it out. So, Louise, we've put the numbers in the hat again. Give it a spin and this one has emerged. Let's have a listen. Let's have a listen. Yes, that comes in to us today from Anne Daly, Thomastown, Tallinstown. Well done, Anne. Thanks for WhatsApping in your horn sound to us on Late Lunch. You honked your horn for 100 for sure. That €100 in cash is yours today. Well done. And we'll need you to honk a little more tomorrow, Thursday and Friday to win that €100. So if you're disappointed yesterday or today, you can still win with us on Late Lunch over the next couple of days. Now, let's just give this a roll on Late Lunch.
The Late Lunch Artist of the Week.
Artist of the Week.
Yes, and my Artist of the Week this week are Take That. And following the success of their first album, which featured mostly cover versions of songs by other artists that did very well for them, I have to say, they released their second album called Everything Changes. And by God, everything did change with the release of this one, because it contained all Gary Barlow original material. And boy, can that man write songs. From which emerged on that album 6 singles, 4 of which became consecutive UK number ones. Oh, what an achievement. What an album that certainly is. Anyway, for my song today, I'm going to hop on a bit. I'm actually picking the songs that I love from Take That, not sequentially or anything like that. The song I picked today was released on the 13th of November 2006 as the first single from what was then their comeback album called Beautiful World. It peaked at number one on the UK singles chart and topped the charts across Europe and beyond. Yes, my Take That song for today is something I need a little more of. It's patience.
Just have a little patience. Still hanging from a love I lost. I'm feeling your frustration. But any minute all the pain will stop. So while I'm sitting there, just try and have a little patience.
Yes, patience from my Artist of the Week. Take That on your Late Lunch this Tuesday afternoon. Final break of the day on the way. And afterwards, you're probably familiar with the term silent sideline. But King's Court Stars GAA Club have come up with a different take on it altogether, and I really like it. We're going to hear all about it next. You know the way it can get very raucous on the sidelines, and we've spoken about it many times over the years here in Late Lunch with children. You know, just it gets too hot, too animated, etc. And of course, on the soccer side, they brought in silent sideline. Now, how practical it is to have a silent sideline, very difficult one indeed. But I like what King's Court Stars GAA Club have come up with. And to tell me more about Cheer Not Steer, their chairperson Kevin Shields joins me. Afternoon, Kevin.
Afternoon, how are we doing?
Doing good. Okay, so Cheer Not Steer. First of all, what's underpinning this? Is it what I was talking about there, what you know usually goes on the sideline, can get a bit heated, etc.? Is it from that point of view?
It is. It's exactly from that point of view. But also, there's different initiatives, as you mentioned there, side and side lanes, and nobody exactly knows what they should be doing on a side lane and what the right protocol or what the right behaviour to be, you know, to be on show for the kids. Mm. So it was born out of that. And essentially what we wanted to do as a club is to have a policy or an initiative that was club-wide, that this applies throughout the club, and then hopefully it'll catch on and parents, coaches, players, everybody buys into the same initiative.
you're rolling it out with your academy players, and your academy, these are non-competitive years when youngsters come to you first. So you want to introduce it there at first.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we set up the academy back in 2018. The academy was just, it's a brand as such that we said the King's Court Stars Academy, and that's essentially our Go Games team. So it's a non-competitive teams, which is now up to from under 6 up to under 12. And what we do then as a club, we then appoint people in different positions. So we have a head of academy. I held that position once myself, but and we empower those people to come up to improve things year on year. And our new head of academy for this year is a fella called Colm Kearn. So he's our head of academy, and he has brought this initiative to my table, if you like, and we've asked him to roll it out. And so it's a great credit has to go to Colm Kearn on that, you know.
So what does it mean? What do people... There's plenty of noise on the sideline, I know, with this as well. It's not silent, as you said, nothing to do with that. It's quite different. Do you do you tell people what they can say? How does this work?
Essentially, what it's going to entail is, as you said, it's not silence, because that's not practical. And also... Kids need encouragement, and they want to hear encouragement. And kids will encourage. If you're ever at a kids game, and the kids along the line will be cheering in on their friends on the field. So it was born out of that type of idea. Is that yes? Instead of instructing kids what to do, it's just to cheer them along the way, encourage them without shouting instruction, because you can get 3 or 4 different people shouting different instructions at any given point in time. And that's very hard for a young child to process, but they can't process it. So it's just that kids have to make their own decisions on the field. So we want to develop footballers who can make their own decisions on the field, given this a different set of circumstances each time they play, not to have to rely on somebody to shout instruction.
Okay, so this is all about encouragement, you know, giving them, praising them, you know what I mean? And what about somebody who's coaching a group? Are they bound by this as well? Does the coach or the coaches have to adopt this policy as well as the spectators? Or is it just for the coaching staff?
No, it's coaches and spectators.
It's for everybody.
Obviously, there is going to be the coaches of the team will have... They'll have their own sort of instructions they will give the players before breaks, etc. And they will. So it's you don't have 3 to 4 different, or 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 in some instances, different instructions at one time being shouted onto a player. So it's essentially creating a positive environment for kids to flourish and not to be feeling as if, you know, people are shouting in, and as parents and as coaches too.
Okay, so it encompasses everybody. What you want is praise, encouragement. You don't want criticism. You don't want anything nasty happening there. So with that, will you have to come up with a set of guidelines? You know what I'm saying? Or things people understand they can and can't say?
Well, that's possibly the next step in the process. And it is a process. This isn't going to happen overnight.
Yeah.
Nothing like this ever does. So it is like the video that has gone a bit viral there on social media. That's a brilliant first step. That's basically making people aware that, listen, we are bringing out this initiative and we're going to follow through on it.
Yeah.
So hopefully now whenever the pitches all dry out a little bit, and we can get all these teams on grass, that this is where it's going to start. And it's going to be a very, very positive environment.
It is indeed. Listen, thanks for joining me, Kevin. I really like it. I wish you well with it. We'll check in with you again down the road. Thanks indeed.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Take care. That's Kevin Shields there, chairperson of King's Court Stars. Eddie's on his way with the drive. We leave you now in the company of Beyonce and our big, big hit, Texas Hold'em. See you for midweek late lunch tomorrow at 1:30. Take care.
This ain't Texas. Down, 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 down. So pocket Lexus and throw your keys.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.